Well, good morning, folks. This is Lenny Lawson, the car guru, and I'm so glad to be with you, as you know. I'm trying to figure something out. Now, when I was probably 12, my dad was late coming home. It was dark. And all of a sudden, we were down. Wendell and I were downstairs. That's my brother. We're downstairs watching our black and white TV. Well, it's probably color at that point. And we're probably watching the moon landing or something. But anyway, Dad came home late, which was kind of normal. He worked for Chevrolet. He was not a Chevrolet dealer at that time. He just worked for the company. Most of you know what that means, the difference. But, you know, there's some people that still think that if you are a Chevrolet dealer, you work for Chevrolet. We don't, or didn't. And so, anyway, my dad was late, and so I heard the front door. Well, we went running, you know, just like you do when you love your dad. And there he was, and we gave him a big hug, and he had his, you know, typical black suit or gray suit on with a white shirt and a blue tie. And he had a big old smile on his face. And he said, "Boys, let's look outside." And up on the street in St. Albans, West Virginia, we lived on Aleph Lane. I know it's weird. The light was on inside that Caprice Classic station wagon. And in that the back of that station wagon, I could see a Honda motorcycle. And so to fit in the station wagon had to be a pretty small Honda motorcycle. It happened to be a CT70. And there weren't just one of them in there. There were two. One for me and one for my bro. So we went tearing up that hill. Of course, our house was sat down low, so the street was elevated. It was quite the scene. And we went tearing up that hill, and he had the tailgate down. And so we helped him unload them out of there. And oh, my gosh, we were so excited. Matter of fact, we put them in neutral and coasted around to the back of the house. And we had a sliding doors in the back of the house of our and right that led right into the den. And we just went right inside and parked them right in front of the TV and sat on them and watched TV for about 3 hours. So, you know, back then that motorcycle was about $350. So it wasn't cheap, 1969 and 70. I'm just looking here at the results of a bring a trailer auction for a Honda CT70. It's got, well, it's not the results because it's got 19 minutes to go, 19 minutes and 21 seconds. And it's up to $6,900. Would somebody please explain that to me? Why that would be such a popular motorcycle? This was a pressed steel frame. The gas tank was under the seat. Probably had, I don't know, 5 horsepower, maybe. Fold down handlebars. You just turn these little knobs and it would loosen it up where you could fold the handlebars down. And I guess so you could get it inside of a Caprice station wagon. Little wheels and tires. I could have bought one of these for probably $3,000 2 years ago, but they have steadily gone up. And it frustrates me that I can't buy one. But anyway, that's my Honda C70 or CT70 story. And we'll move on. You know, sometimes you see these vintage cars, you'll see small increases in value over time or decreases in value over time. You know, cars like 55 through 57 Chevrolets are just kind of flat. Cars from the 50s are flat in general. One trend that we're seeing, though, is that the millennials and Generation X, those are the ones that are right ahead of the millennials, they are starting to really appreciate classic cars. But they don't give a rip about the 50s. They like cars from the late 60s and 70s. And then it skips a while because there was nothing but junk in the 80s, although there are a few. But they are interested in like Datsun 280Zs and 300Zs and 350Zs and stuff like that. They're interested in Supras. Subarus, believe it or not, turbocharged WRXs. They're also interested in these Chevrolet pickup trucks that I got to the point where I was just pretty much sick of them. Chevrolet built the same basic body from 1973 until 1987. They are referred to as the square body trucks. And I never thought they would be worth preserving. I thought the previous body style was way better looking. I guess I sold so many of those that I started taking them for granted. But apparently, they are extremely hot now. A nice short wheelbase Scottsdale, remember that name? Scottsdale pickup truck. They didn't have extended cabs back then. They were either a long bed or a short bed, two-wheel drive or four-wheel drive. Now, we did have a commercial version of the truck that did have four doors, but we never sold them except to, like, you know, Summers Taylor or somebody like that, you know, somebody that was building roads or buildings or something. They needed to haul a crew of people. But very rarely did we sell anything that had four doors, any trucks. That's all we sell now, pretty much. I mean, we can get a regular cab, but, you know, only old geezers like me still like them. So, but these trucks are really hot. Another thing that surprisingly to me is hot is Mustang. Mustangs from the 60s and early 70s are not, well, let's see, it stops at 70. When you go to a 71 Mustang, you're going to a different, you know, a design, a very flat, long, stretched out thing that nobody really liked. And then you get the Mustang II, which was, you know, a reaction to the oil embargo and high gas prices. So Ford said, well, let's build a Mustang. You know, they thought about killing the Mustang altogether, and they said, nah, let's go ahead and build another Mustang. Well, it sucked. Sorry. And then they, of course, you know, GM was not far behind with the Monza and the Vega, if you remember. You know, the Vega failed, so they said, well, let's just see if we can fail a little bit more. So they just started building Monzas, changed the name, and then they said, well, you know, let's just, okay, it's not selling, let's put a V8 engine in it. That was kind of fun. I remember having one of those as a demo. I could just smoke the tires on that thing. But that's about all I could do because they didn't sell very well. And so the Mustang got better when they came out with the Fox Body Mustang. And now those are getting popular as well because that's the car that Generation X and the Millennials remember. And bringing some pretty big money. But the 65, 66... 67, kind of. 68s, they aren't real popular unless it's a Shelby. And then you get up 69, that's when they came out with, like, the Mach 1. And then the Boss 302, which is, you know, a big money car right now. So these are things that are popular with the surprising young generation. They're going after some of these cars, and I can give you a few examples. 1966 Shelby Mustang GT350H, which was interesting. Why does it have an H? Does anybody know? It's because the H stands for Hertz. Hertz Rental Car Company bought a bunch of Shelby GT350s and had them painted either black with gold stripes or red with gold stripes. And they had the hotter approximately 300 horsepower engine. Shelby did his magic on it. He took a high-performance engine out of basically the Ford GT, which had 271 horsepower, and changed the heads and carburetor. I don't know what else he did. I can't remember. But anyway, a 66 Shelby GT Mustang just sold on the 25th of February for $102,500. Are you surprised? Some of the Fox Body Mustangs, here's a 88 Mustang sold for, let's see, what it is, a 37.5. So that's way more than it sold for when it was new. Even coupes are starting to bring money. 66 Mustang Coupe sold on the 21st of February for $24,000. I don't know what the details are on it. It's really hard to judge. I shouldn't be quoting prices on here. You know, I said that the Mustangs from the early 70s, like 71 and so forth, weren't very valuable. But here's one, 71 Mustang convertible, 351 Ram Air in immaculate condition, in a good color, 44,500. You know, that's not chump change. Absolutely not. Fastback Mustangs are the bringing the big money, though. Here's a 65 Mustang Fastback K-Code, which means that it had the high-performance engine four-speed. It was bid to 66.4 and did not sell. I bought one very similar to it, but mine was much nicer. And I paid a little bit more than that for it. But I believe that car is worth in the mid-80s now. That's how fast they're going up. Now, I did this about 4 months ago, and now it's gone up to the mid-80s. Did I do good? I think I did. Let's take our first break. We'll be back in just a minute. You know, folks, I'm convinced that nobody knows what a car is worth. They only know what their opinion is, or they know what they're willing to pay for it. And so, you know, people say, well, my car's worth more than that. Really? To whom is it worth more than that? A lot of people just, you know, they speculate. They look on some dealer's website, you know, as far as what they're asking for a vehicle, and they say, well, my car's worth that. Well, it's not. You know, it's worth what somebody's willing to pay for it. I bought a 99 F-350 dually, regular cab, very low miles, 39,000 actual miles on this thing. And I paid $41,500 for it on Bring a Trailer. And everybody in the dealership said, Lenny, you've lost your mind. And maybe I have. But, you know, I wanted it. I felt like it was something that I could sell and make a little bit. I knew there wasn't a lot of profit there, but maybe there will be, you know, down the road. I can resell it on Bring a Trailer, or I can put it on Facebook Marketplace. That 7.3-liter Navistar diesel engine is like, I don't know, the gold standard of diesel engines. It has way less horsepower and torque than the current diesel engine that we sell. But people just love it because they think it's bulletproof. It's funny how certain vehicles will take on that aura. There are some Dodge Ram trucks with the Cummins diesel. There's certain years of the Cummins diesel. I can't remember what year it is, but there's this particular three-valve year that will get people, that will get the Mopar guys all excited. They'll say, "What? You have one of them? How much you want for it?" And then it all starts. So, I mean, that's just the way this racket goes. So I'm leaving for Amelia Island and going to the Gooding Auction and several others. But the Gooding Auction is the one I'm most excited about because I get to sit in the expensive seats this time. As I told you, I think yesterday, I registered to bid. And my brother's going to be sitting beside me. And I told him, Wendell, don't make any hand motions, because they'll think you're bidding. So keep your hands at your side. I never forget going to the Nashville Auto Auction. I took my dad, and we drove to Nashville, and he's all excited, and we're in the lane and so forth. And I'm standing underneath the auctioneer's tower there, and I'm trying to get his attention. And I hear my dad yelling for me, and he's on the other side. It's a pretty noisy place. There's probably 100 dealers there. All up and down the lanes, bidding on these cars. And my dad is saying, Lenny. And he's waving his hand. The auctioneer thought he was bidding. And dad bought a Corsica that had been rear-ended and badly. And so I didn't realize that until after at the auction, this lady came up to me and said, you from Lost Chevrolet? And I said, yes. It's wait, I need you to sign this. What is this? It's for a Corsica you bought. I didn't buy a Corsica. Well, somebody from your dealership did. Well, it was my daddy. He was carrying on. So I told my brother not to wave his hand, not to move, wink, move his lips in any certain way to get the auctioneer's attention, because we may end up buying a Ferrari if we're not careful. So don't go to a dealership. And, you know, if they say, we're going to pay you this much for your car, you know, don't act like you're some kind of an expert just because you went online and checked out prices, because you're not. And they're just throwing a number against the wall to see if it sticks. Now, you know, I'm all for you doing some research. I'm all for you calling me, 423-552. Or you got a pencil? 552-2020, and I'll tell you what I'll pay for it. That's an accurate number. Like, you don't need a slide rule to figure that one out. It's an accurate number, and it's backed by a check as long as I have some money in the bank. And so if you go to a dealership and they offer you way less than that, then you can say, well, I'll just sell it to Lenny. And you watch what happens when you say that. They'll say, number one, who's Lenny? Number two, why does his opinion matter? He's probably, number three, he's probably some flake. And you'll say, no, he actually offered to write me a check. And then number four, they'll say, okay, we'll give you that for it. It works pretty good. I'm serious. You know, if you've got a buyer, you know, dealers, you have to stand up to salespeople and sales managers. You don't have to be mean, argumentative. You just, you know, state the fact. Say, listen, you know, I've got the power. And they say, what do you mean? Say, well, I have the power of my exiting your establishment. And, you know, I'll do that in a heartbeat if you're not willing to do what I want to do. Now, unfortunately, right now in the current market environment, you don't have a lot of, as I said on Green Acres, leverage. I know it's leverage, but you don't really have a lot because of the high prices. So you're not going to be able to negotiate a deal down from MSRP much unless you're buying a Hyundai Tucson. If you want something like a Silverado or an F-150 or something, you're going to pay pretty much close to list price for it. It's, you know, if you really want it, big deal. You're going to get a really good price on your trade, but only if you know what somebody's willing to pay for it, other than the dealership where you are. You cannot go by book value. I've got a program called FastBook. And I can walk up to your vehicle and open the door, and I can scan the barcode inside your door. Yeah, there's probably one there. And or I can punch in the VIN, and it will tell me what cars like yours are selling for at auctions. It'll give me five different book values. It'll average them. It lets me rate the miles, the condition, and the turn time of vehicles like that that are in the market right now. How fast are they turning? There's a lot of factors go into it. And so, you know, we use that as a guide. It's still, you know, it's not going to jump out and, you know, there's no hand that comes out of the phone and smacks me in the face and says, hey, Lenny, give this much for this car. I still have to make a judgment call. And that's what you're going to face when you go out and trade. There aren't any rebates, so to speak. I mean, there are some. There are private offers. Please, folks, if you're in the market for a car, do not throw those things away when they come in the mail. I know it looks like junk mail, but that's real money. I've got a guy right now that's got, I think, $5,000 worth of private offers. He's just waiting for his F-150 to come in so he can use them. And so he's paying MSRP. This might be some, I'm not sure exactly what he's paying, but he's negotiated a price with my sales manager, and he's got these private offers. And that's real money. I mean, it's $5,000 he's going to get off. And plus, he's going to take advantage of the 0% for 60 months. So don't throw those away because they have pretty long expiration dates. You may not be in the market right now, but you may be 3 months from now. And so, you know, it's not like winning the lottery. But it is not chump change. So, let's take our last break, and we'll be back in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. Folks, you know I'm not bragging, but I do have a lot of people. When I go to a party, which is seldom, I'm more of a homebody, but when I do go out, people are always asking me, how's the car business? What's going on? What's this I hear about a chip shortage? You know, it's all these questions about the car business. And, of course, I think we all know why, right? It's because we are a barometer of what's going on, of people's attitudes about, you know, things. People say, well, if people are buying cars, then they must not be worried about Ukraine. And when I tell them that things are really pretty good, from a overall business standpoint, we're not selling as many cars, especially last month and the month before, as we were. It's because of the chip shortage. We just can't get them. But we are still selling cars, and the transaction prices are, you know, higher, so we're able to survive. And I think that's important. You know, there are a lot of forces out there that are pushing for there to be no more car dealers. They don't want car dealers. They want to be like Tesla. You just order it from the factory and you cut out the middleman, which I guess you could consider a car dealer the middleman. I mean, they've been playing that role since, I think, 1898, when there was somewhere around there was the first new car dealer up in near Cleveland, Ohio. And so who knows? I think we're necessary. I think we're essential. You know, I donate a lot of money to my local community. We provide jobs. We generate a lot of sales tax revenue. We also service our customers. We're very close. They don't have to drive to Knoxville to get their oil changed. Imagine if there was nothing but factory stores. Everybody would always pay MSRP. There would be no discounting because they wouldn't have to. You know, they would have a monopoly, so to speak. If you are, there'd probably be only, I'd say more than likely one Chevrolet dealer in East Tennessee, and you would have to travel to them. Where's your nearest Tesla dealer? Knoxville. So there you go. I think dealers are an essential part of communities, and you know, they basically locally owned. Well, not all of them, but you know, a lot of them are locally owned, and local employees, and they're there to serve you. And I think that's important, and I'm glad to be one of those peoples. If I can help you in any way, don't hesitate to call me, 423-552-2020. If I don't answer the phone, leave a message or text me if you know how to do that, or email, and I'll be glad to respond to you. My email is Lenny, L-E-N-N-I-E, Lawson, 2020 at gmail.com. And it's my pleasure to serve you, and I'll see you tomorrow.